Hello, everyone. This is Dark Journalist. Today I have a special interview with Oxford scholar and Giza Death Star book series author, Dr. Joseph Farrell. Now, we'll go deep into the bizarre geopolitical hurricane gaining force as we head into 2022 with major moves in the hot zone of Cuba, a supply crisis being engineered in the U.S., and massive repression worldwide as a global dictatorship steps out of the shadows to wreak chaos as it is being exposed.
Now, the breakaways are trying to take over. They're trying to step out into the open, if you look at it a certain way. Basically, what we're seeing is a federal government that's been captured by a group of radicals that have no connection to the history or culture of this country.
How does exotic technology and the UFO file fit into this picture? Let's go ask Dr. Joseph Farrell. Joseph, it's great to see you.
Good to see you, Daniel. Thanks for having me back.
You've been doing some remarkable updates at News from the Nefarium, and I caught one that you did on Havana Syndrome. And I want to tie it in this way, which is that, you know, over the weekend, we learned that President Biden blocked the release of the JFK assassination records 58 years later, citing two things. One, the pandemic, which... got to wonder how that has to do with anything. And two, identifiable danger. 58 years later, of course, and they like to do a lot of looping in with Cuba around this. So I found it interesting, all these reports on Havana Syndrome and then the big block on the JFK records again. It's incredible.
Well, what that tells me is that the same people that pulled off that is the same power interests, let's put it that way, are still in business, and they want to, you know, they want to cover their you know what's.
Yes.
But the Cuba thing, you know, the Cuba thing has now spread everywhere. We've had reports of Russians suffering it. We've had reports of China suffering it. We've had reports in, I think, Bogota, Colombia, the United Kingdom, Austria, Germany, you know, this is spread, Wyoming now.
Wow.
Wyoming. And what's interesting to me is that this is not a new technology.
Right.
Whatever it is, I'm, you know, call me nuts, but whatever it is, it's a microwave technology. It's based on interferometry, multi-beam mixing, because you go back to those reports initially of the Havana Syndrome. People were in their beds hearing this strange stuff. They'd get up from their bed and it would quit. And to me that just says this is interferometry. So I had people asking me after I did that news interview, well, how does this work? You know, you'd have to know where a person is to aim the weapon to get them. And it's not that kind of thing. It's not one beam that you're aiming. You're aiming two or more beams to create an interference pattern in a certain area. And it's that interference pattern that establishes a beat frequency that they're able to modulate the information into the brain. So when you step outside of that region of interference, you're not going to hear anything. You know, and we're being told this is all crickets.
Yeah, well, that was the best one.
No.
Good old attack crickets.
Yeah, kill the tech crickets. No, this is an old technology, and you can use it for, you know, pretty much anything. But brain manipulation is certainly one of them. It's very, very old. I covered it in Microcosm and Medium. This technology has been around since the 70s.
Yeah.
And the Soviets, you know, the Soviets were experimenting with this stuff. We were certainly experimenting with this stuff. There's a little bit of evidence that the Germans were experimenting with this stuff. But the problem is people don't get this. But it's been around since the 70s. And by now, I'm assuming that it's been miniaturized to a certain extent that you can, you know, portable units, you can move this stuff around. and create these interference patterns. So it's not new. We've had people in Washington, D.C. reporting this stuff.
Right.
So, you know, it's not new. It's just not new. The real question is, who's doing this?
Yes.
Because if you've got China experiencing it, if you've got Russia experiencing it, American embassy personnel, Germany, Wyoming, somebody's doing this. Uh-huh. And what we have to understand is it's a fairly easy technology for anybody with a little radio and microwave experience to do. So we may not even be looking at state actors here. This is the problem. We might be looking at corporate actors. You know, we might be looking at non-state actors. We could be looking at literally anything. Mafia, you know, anything.
Right. They only, in the media, they either want to ignore it and say it doesn't exist or that it's Russian, you know, it's Russian interference. It is interesting that at the end of Obama's administration, he opens diplomatic relations with Cuba, which should have been like a big deal because they'd been shut down since 59.
Right.
But it wasn't that big a deal. It was sort of like a side issue. And then very quickly, that situation deteriorated. We sent down some diplomats. They came down with these weird concussions and other problems. But Joseph, the thing I found the strangest about all of it was that some of them, when they came back here, they continued to experience the symptoms, like they were continued to be targeted.
Right. Right. This is the problem. The question is why? And I'm not convinced that Russia or Cuba were behind it because, again, like I say, this is a technology that's very, very easy if you've got radio or microwave experience to engineer. And the fact that the embassy personnel are pursued once they're out of Cuba, well, what's this about?
Right.
And the only thing I can come up with, Daniel, is somebody, whoever it may be, Russia or, you know, is deliberately trying to interfere with our government personnel. And that's very disturbing because then the problem becomes, all right, how widespread is this? Is everything being reported to us? And I don't think it is. Is everything being reported to us? And what's the objective here? Well, this is a mind manipulation technology. And clearly they're trying to incapacitate targeted individuals for whatever reason. If it's a mind control technology, then that opens us up to, you know, the $64,000 question that's behind continuity of government operations, so-called devolution operations. And that's one of the reasons that those operations were designed, is what happens if someone is able to infiltrate the government or manipulate the mentality of people in the government through these types of means. So, you know, this is a big story. It's not small. It's not
absolutely. I mean, we've been aware of mind control technology. Mm-hmm. The Manchurian Candidate has a certain level of that. So it's been out there in the public sphere. It's interesting you mentioned COG though, because last year suddenly the media, Nancy Pelosi, everyone, they wanted to talk about COG. Before, you couldn't mention it in congressional session. You'd actually be shut down. So they wanted now to get it out there, and they did some weird shakeups with the commanders, as we've discussed before. The new one that they have in there, he actually was part of the 509th bombing group, which
has no connection to anything.
It's pretty, I mean, this is an interesting coincidence. Considering Roswell. In any case, this guy gets put in by Esper in 2020 in August. And they retire the guy who's in there. And he says, oh, I want to retire and be with my family. He's 53. Seems a little young for retirement. But anyway, this guy was already coming out and talking about how, oh, you know, what we have in so many of these COG bases, there's so many visitors that we don't know where to put them. I think this was his big stepping in it comment. So they replaced him and they have this Van Herk character in there. After the election, Trump, and after COG was raised in October, when it was still looking like Trump may win unless they do something wild and crazy. And then they go through the election. November 3rd comes and goes, and Trump's first big move is he fires the defense secretary after the fact of the election. The COG snowball there, and Nancy Pelosi saying, hey, I could wind up being president, you know, if this plays out right, if both Pence and Trump get COVID. This was the weird echo from last year, because COG has been hanging out there. And we know from the work of Professor Scott that every deep event in American history, from Watergate to the JFK assassination, Iran-Contra, 9/11, it has that COG personnel involved.
Yes.
What's going on with COG where they're willing to talk about it now?
My suspicion, Daniel, is, and I'll come right out and say it, my suspicion, let's look at the question of that many people are asking, who's really running things in Swampington, D.C.? Clearly Biden and co. is not all there. Someone else is running this.
Oh, yeah.
And so we have essentially a fake presidency with this very radical agenda. And I have to wonder, given the craziness of what we're seeing, if they, let's go back to the period before the election when you had that committee of Democrats, kind of an ad hoc committee, gaming things out.
Yeah.
War gaming things out.
Right.
Creating, remember that?
Yeah.
And then we had, shortly after this election, pardon me, the election, we had the news that they wanted to form a committee to take care of the nuclear football.
Right.
So what I'm wondering is, are we looking at a group of people that have access to tremendous computing power, and are they really responding to a scenario that a computer is gaming out?
Oh.
Because, yeah, it's flaky, it's off the wall, but there's just enough insanity going on to make you wonder, are humans really in charge of this, or is this something that they've set up a scenario and gamed it out on a computer, and they're just following whatever it is the computer tells them to do? I really have to wonder that, because you've got all of these little signals prior to Biden assuming office that are just bizarre. Nuclear football running by a committee. And again, the message that they're sending there, stop and think if you're a Putin or a Xi Jinping, and they're sending all these signals in America, who then is in charge over here? And that remains a big mystery. So it's a big mystery in the sense that they've created a geopolitical condition where any potential adversary is going to have to think twice, because they don't know who's in charge.
Oh.
You know, that's a very, very iffy geopolitical scenario. When you add to it, you know, these strange remarks of, we've got to fight little green men, thoroughly modern Millie, calling up China and saying, yeah, if we're going to attack, I'll give you a call and let you know, you know.
I mean, this is, I can't believe this guy still has his job.
I can't either. But the real problem is, why would he say something like that? Well, you drop that into the context of everything else we're talking about.
Right.
And what it does is it scrambles the decision-making processes of any potential adversary. Then, you know, since we're just speculating wildly here on the end of the twig, we have this so-called supply chain mess that all of these cargo ships off the West Coast are stacking up and not being unloaded and so on. And Daniel, I really have to wonder, given Milley's comment on April 1st of 2020 in that very strange press conference where he talks about all of these assets being deployed to the Caribbean, the Navy, the Coast Guard, a battalion of military troops and so on, against supposedly and ostensibly against the drug cartels. Now, that kind of effort tells me that they're looking for something. And remember Millie's comment, you're not going to get in. You're not getting through. You're not getting through. At the time, I wondered, are they really looking for someone trying to smuggle in a firecracker?
Oh.
And I wonder the same thing about all these cargo ships. Are they stacked up out there because they're looking for something that might be smuggled into this country, be it Chinese troops, you know, whatever, a firecracker, who knows? But I have to wonder, given all of this stuff, all these little clues that we've been watching, if there's a very different game going on than they're letting on. So I question who's in charge of this misadministration. Yeah. The left, we've already seen the left media outlets claiming that Trump is running a shadow cabinet.
Right.
You know, and I got to wonder, you know, I have to wonder if that's the case. Are we looking at something that's being orchestrated for a potential crack up? I don't know.
This is interesting. There's definitely something. Well, first of all, we've never seen anything like that kind of supply crunch.
So no, we haven't.
Some level, it's either engineered or there's some big reason that we don't know about that it's happening.
Right.
We've never seen ships just hanging out waiting to deliver goods. And their explanations are absurd. You know, they had Buttigieg who was out there, and he, you know, this guy's on 1 month maternity leave. Okay?
I know.
So, you know, should be doing his job. But anyway, he's saying, well, you know, it's just because we're buying so many goods, and that's a good sign of a healthy economy, which is absurd because the economy, the inflation aspects and all the basic aspects of the economy look terrible right now.
Yeah.
So he's just blowing smoke. Saki's blowing smoke. There's no truth there. But you're getting right to the point of it, which is, what's going on?
Yeah.
Why are they having all these ships with goods there? And it's causing supply crises so that all these small businesses now.
Yeah.
I mean, the really big ones are having problems, right? Yeah. So the small ones, forget it. You just wipe them off the board after a while.
Well, look at the nature of the supply chain that's being affected. Most of it are tech goods coming from China or Taiwan or Vietnam or whatever. And that to me is an indicator, again, that they're possibly looking for something. They don't, for whatever reason, they don't want these goods coming in. And again, one of my suspicions has always been, since the whole promise scandal and the idea of clipper chips, if you remember way back when they were talking about that, I'm wondering if this is really a security issue rather than a supply chain issue. And I strongly suspect that what they're doing are a lot of behind-the-scenes inspections of a lot of those cargo crates coming in. And then add on top of that, you've got basically nutty policies being put into place by California to prevent truckers from delivering this stuff.
Yes.
So, again, why the nutty policy? And the only thing I can come up with, put into context with Milley's statements in 2020, and, you know, he's come out with a lot of crazy statements, if you look at the man.
Yes.
Yeah, the little green men, you know, that we're going to have to be fighting, you know. What the hell is really going on here?
Yeah.
I don't think it's just supply chain. I really don't. I don't think it's just bad policy. I don't think the Biden administration, at least at the level of Biden himself, is behind this. This is coming from somewhere else.
Interesting.
And you, like you point out, you've got a press secretary who's got experience with the Pentagon.
Yes.
So there's something going on.
That's where her roots are. That's, and they're basically making her kind of a silent president.
Yep.
She's dealing with the press conferences in a way I've never seen a press secretary do. This president, he won't face any press except Anderson Cooper and scripted things where he freezes, you know.
Right.
so those aren't real, you know, by any stretch of the imagination. He can't come out and face normal press.
Right.
So Psaki's position, in a way, is quite remarkable. because mm-hmm. she becomes the person who articulates the entire program of the administration.
So, it makes you wonder. It makes you wonder. And this is why I think we could be looking at a real continuity of government operation here, that whatever this administration is, it's not in charge. It's not in charge. It's creating a bunch of theater.
Yes. Well, you mentioned theater, and this is absolutely on the record. Before, we've had administrations, and we've seen people green screen things and all the rest.
Sure.
But these guys absolutely have him doing green screened CGI meetings, pretending he's at the White House in the Rose Garden when he's not there. And it's just on the record. Like, everyone knows that's what he's doing. Why would they be doing that?
Well, there's an interesting story. I don't know if you caught the story about the Department of Homeland Security putting up a wall or fence screen around Biden's property in Delaware. Did you see that?
Yes.
And the explanation that they're giving for it is, well, we just need to beef up the security at his home. What I think is possible here, and I'm going back to 9/11 and the Secret Service grabbing Dick Cheney and taking him down into the White House bunker. Remember that episode?
Yes.
And what I'm wondering is, number one, was that the Secret Service protecting Dick Cheney? Or was that the Secret Service imprisoning him? And I have to wonder the same thing about Biden's home. Are they putting that up to protect Biden or to keep him under control?
Interesting.
And given the fact that the man's a complete nutcase, I have to say the latter.
Right.
So why this is happening, again, I think it's a continuity of government operation. I strongly suspect Barack Obama is involved with a lot of this stuff behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And that involvement in turn is why the left is so agitated about what to them looks like Trump running a shadow cabinet. Now, shadow cabinets, if you don't know what they are, folks, this is a borrowing of a term from Great Britain, from British politics, because the party that is not in government right now, the Labour Party, has basically a shadow cabinet. In other words, they've got all of their people lined up that if they were to take power and form a government, they would immediately be able to form a cabinet.
Right.
So you've got essentially a shadow cabinet always operating in Great Britain in the party that's in opposition.
It's a government in waiting.
It's a government in waiting, yes. So there's nothing new about the idea. There's nothing suspicious about the idea. But the fact that now, for the first time in this country, we've heard this term used by the party in power about the party in opposition is indicative that maybe that is what they're afraid of, that there is an actual shadow government in waiting. And if that's the case, then we need only to go a step farther and question, well, if that is the case, is that really a shadow government operating now?
Oh, right.
And if you look at it, Daniel, it appears to me that there is a certain truth to that. Look at all of these Republican governors that are simply defying the federal government.
Yes.
DeSantis, Abbott, and so on and so forth, and saying we're not going to permit this.
This is remarkable.
Yeah, it looks like they're setting up a scenario for a crack up. You know,
yes.
Texas bullion depositories and nullification laws and, you know, all of this stuff going on. And then DeSantis pops out. Oh, well, all of you ships over there in California waiting to unload your goods, well, just unload them here in Florida.
Right.
You know, which I'm thinking, wait a minute here. That means they either have to sail through the Panama Canal or around the Horn of South America and come up to, you know.
Yeah, right.
What?
It is a remarkable suggestion.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like calling a bluff.
Yes.
It's saying there's no real reasons those things can't dock. And if you want me to prove it, send one over here. Although it is bizarre because of the route they would have to take in order to get over there.
Well, you know, why doesn't he suggest unloading them in Mexico and shipping them, you know, by rail or truck? You know, why spend all that extra money and fuel and so on and have to rewrite all of your insurance papers just to sail and unload these things at Florida? Unless his game is really to say, ship them from Asia overland to Europe and then get them on cargo at Rotterdam or Brest or Saint Nazaire or someplace like that and then ship them to Florida. That would be a heck of a lot cheaper anyway.
But right, yeah.
you know, so I'm looking at all of these statements and just, you know, at the surface level, they make no sense. But when you start looking at the broad context behind some of these statements, there's a real shift and realignment of global trade that they want to put through. And there is a real, we're essentially, as I've said many times, Daniel, we're essentially in the Harper's Ferry 2.0 moment in this country. Right. We've got the same sort of economic factors and dislocations in play now that we had before the Civil War. Hmm. We've got sectionalism in this country, you know, the blue counties and the red counties, and we know where they are. That is over the top. It's never been this drastic since before the Civil War. You've got all of these Republican governors defying the federal government. And for that matter, we saw the same thing going on under Trump when you had Democrat governors defying the federal
government.
So I'm wondering, are they literally trying to prep the scenario for a crack up in the country? And it looks to me like that's a possibility. Let's remember what Catherine Fitz has said over and over again. Secession is a very nice way for the central banksters to walk away from all their liabilities that they've made and commitments they've made to the people.
And yes, absolutely. What happens to those years and years of different entitlements, as they're called? But things where, you know, generations of these people have paid into a system, whether it's Social Security or bonds or whatever it is. Right. And it's an easy way to nullify it and say, you know what, snap your fingers. I don't owe you anything anymore because that core of the United States doesn't exist.
Right.
But it's interesting because they have pulled the Civil War rhetoric. They've tried to make it so that, you know, oh, this group is against that group, you know, vaxxed versus unvaxxed, Trump versus leftists, you know. And but they've whipped it up to such a point that I don't think we've ever seen it like this before.
No, we haven't. We haven't. This is a Harper's Ferry 2.0 moment. Because, you know, let's remember the economic reasons for the South's secession. The South was essentially a free trade philosophy. So in other words, the industrialized North, which had industrialized under tariffs, the South was against that because essentially it punished them and the economic burden of those tariffs fell primarily on the South. So secede and conduct your free trade, demand all those federal properties and fortresses back that the states turned over to the federal government, you know, Fort Sumter, and we're off and running.
Right.
So we're in a very, very similar situation right now with the different economic philosophies that are behind what we're seeing now, you know, in these Republican states. And I'm wondering, you know, the way I'm looking at it, Daniel, is that the country is in such a powder keg right now. There are so many justifiably angry people about all of this that all it would take is one little match to light one fuse to get things going. And what bothers me, Daniel, is no one on either side is backing off the rhetoric.
Yes.
You know, and we're right back to Abe Lincoln and Jefferson Davis because neither one's backing off their rhetoric.
Right. Absolutely. When you look at that period, do you think that Lincoln in any way anticipated that it would turn into an extended war, or did he think that these guys were going to basically cave in?
Well, my reading of it is that both sides, South and North, thought that this would be a short war. I don't think the South expected Lincoln to mobilize like he did. I don't think that Lincoln, particularly if you look at the way the Northern newspapers were covering the secession, prior to the first Battle of Bull Run, First Manassas, as the South liked to call it, prior to that battle, the North was expecting this to be, you know, that's just a rebel rabble down there. They've got no military experience whatsoever. You know, Thomas Jackson and General Beauregard had other things in mind. But, you know, that battle turned into a Union rout.
Wow.
I mean, Beauregard could have easily marched right into Washington, D.C. He didn't do it because they did not want to create the image of an offensive war.
Mm-hmm.
And even when Lee invades Maryland in 1862, prior to Antietam, he puts out this little proclamation to the citizens of Maryland that we are not here to invade your territory and so on and so forth. We are here simply to conduct normal military operations and so on. So no one expected, and least of all, I think, Abraham Lincoln, until after Bull Run, when he realizes we've got a real fight on our hands.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when Lincoln institutes a draft in several northern states and calls up northern militias and so on. And even then, he's faced with Union governors that absolutely refuse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it turned into a mess real fast, and that's my worry about right now. This could turn into a mess real fast.
Absolutely. The lesson there is not to be manipulated into
right.
the situation, because again, the Civil right. War has that outside influence of the British
yep.
looking at it and licking their chops and thinking.
And France.
Yes.
And Russia.
Right.
You know, it's a real mess. And add on top of that, we have with the Afghanistan fiasco, we've created such a geopolitical nightmare for ourselves. Our allies are wondering, what good are we? And I don't blame them. You've got the Chinese making noises about invading Taiwan. Good luck with that, China. I would think twice before you do,
mm-hmm.
because all of those dams that you've built are immediately targets.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to mess up your infrastructure and in a way that would make it very difficult for you to wage a long war, just invade Taiwan.
Right.
You know, Three Gorges Dam becomes an immediate target.
Yes.
Yeah. That's not a scenario I want to play.
So there's something remarkable there, because we've heard about these hypersonic missile tests.
Yeah.
And they're saying, you know, China's saying, no. This is not what you think it is. It's actually a spacecraft.
Uh-huh. A hypersonic missile is.
There we go. Sorting right down the middle with the rhetoric.
Mm-hmm.
But that's – I've heard from certain circles that whoever got their hands on or deployed that publicly was basically signaling for war. Mm-hmm. What do you think of that?
Well, I think that that's a good possibility. Russia just came out and revealed that its MiG-41, its new interceptor fighter, would be capable of hypersonic and space. So in other words, an airplane that launches into space, lower space, and can do all sorts of mischief.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, they're signaling war, but again, the United States is sending out such mixed signals. If I were them, I'd be thinking twice, because they don't know what we have up our sleeve. Now, we may have nothing up our sleeve, but go back and remember some of those strange things that Trump was saying when mm-hmm. he was in office. Well, we need another space force, and we've got weapons we don't even need to use, nuclear weapons. You know, okay, well, what are they? You know,
yeah,
well,
right.
I'm not saying. We had that strange incident of with Korea during the Trump administration, when I think it was a general, it may have even been Milley, who was asked about how the United States might respond to North Korea, would that, a reporter deliberately asked him, would that include kinetic weapons? In other words, rods of God. And the answer was yes.
Yes.
So, you know, they're playing everybody, all the great powers are playing the usual game and saber rattling. Sooner or later, here's the problem. When you play this kind of poker, someone's going to go all in and either call the bluff or find out the hard way that it's not a bluff. Right. That's very worrying. And right now, I'm the most worried about China, Daniel, because China is in a mess of its own. Mm-hmm. You've got Evergrande collapsing, and that's going to take a lot of those other Chinese real estate companies with them. It's going to really bollocks up their economy. You've got Xi Jinping in that big rivalry with his own vice president. So there's not nearly the kind of unity in the Communist Party of China that people think there is. On top of all of this, you've got floods, you've got a declining food, you've got a growing food crisis, I should say, in China, and you've got a demographic crunch that's going to hit China in about 20 to 30 years. This is why they've all of a sudden changed their one-child policy, because the population is getting older. You've got Japan rearming. So, you know, what do you do when you're in a domestic crisis? Well, you create tension geopolitically and have a bunch of fighters flying over Taiwan. Fortunately, the Taiwanese haven't shot at them.
Right.
But, you know, if China pulls the Taiwan card and decides to do an invasion, we're off and running. So all of this stuff is going on right now. This is a very, very bad, dangerous time. And we've got a government. We don't really know who's in charge.
Yeah, that's right. Stepford Biden is up there.
And is this man, does he have the mental competence to handle the nuclear football?
No, certainly not.
So who is exercising control of that?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, this is the problem.
Well, when foreign nations see him go out there and stumble around and not say anything, and they know the cloud of suspicion he got in under, it instantly weakens our position around the world.
Absolutely it does. Absolutely it does. We have not been in this kind of geopolitical mess ever in our history.
Wow.
Ever.
It's fascinating. One thing about the China piece is we hear from a lot of good people researching on the ground that so many of the takeover aspects or things that came out like lockdowns and the really kind of fascist style policies were related somehow to the emergence of the CCP, and that this was the exercise of their power from Pelosi to Mitch McConnell to Biden. And we know that those links are there. How much do you put behind that? Because it does seem that the Chinese government has a real foothold in ours.
Yes, I agree with that. This is the big elephant in the room that no one wants to talk about, is how much influence really do the Chinese have over this current administration? And my suspicion is it's a lot more than anyone's willing to admit. And the other thing that to take into consideration here, you now have all of these Democrats resigning, saying that they're not going to run again.
Right.
And everybody's saying, well, it's because they're expecting a bloodbath in 2022. No, I think it's because if there is a bloodbath, all of that Chinese influence may come out.
Right. And they'll be exposed right in the middle.
And they'll be exposed right in the middle of it. And they want to get out of the way. You know, let the chips fall on Joe Biden and his wonderful family.
Including the great artist Hunter.
Including the great artist Hunter. You know, and let's remember the real Chinese connection here goes back to Nixon and Kissinger and a certain fam damily that has a surname that begins with a B. I never miss the opportunity, as you know, Daniel, to bash on the Bush family.
Well, this is an interesting thing because so much of this and the emergence of China and their threat to the United States and the fact that their system is so repressive, social credit scores, torturing people for social media posts and all the rest of it. I mean, that's all real. There's no exaggeration or propaganda to that. That's a repressive system. So, you know, America has its major issues, but it's not like, you know, putting the Chinese in charge, you know, that would be a step down because their situation and government ruling structure is so repressive. So, you know, what's interesting to me, too, is that it seems to me the Davos crowd now, what they've done is they've created New America in China.
Yes.
And they've exported all the jobs and the factories and everything else. And we know that Google and Facebook and Apple and all those guys do quite well in China. That's basically their real stronghold. Things here are kind of like a superficial thing. Hey, you get your own Apple store, but the real manufacturing, all that takes place over there. Mm-hmm. So with that in mind, the Davos group, using China as a base, they want the China ascendancy and they want the U.S. to be brought down. And that seems to be the card that they're playing. And it's a pretty dangerous card, the way that they're playing it.
Well, what they've done, in my opinion, Daniel, particularly under this misadministration, is they have overplayed their hand dramatically.
Oh, yeah.
And they have got pushback I don't think that they were expecting to get at a popular level. And this is going on in Europe as well as here. They're getting pushback on the whole planned scamdemic narrative.
Yes.
And the interesting thing is and Catherine was the one that told me this in her last Solari report, she's noticing more and more people waking up and connecting the planned scamdemic narrative to the financial narrative and what they want to achieve in terms of a social credit system by way of a digital cashless system.
Oh, wow.
More and more people wait. And I'm finding the same thing on my website as well. So the pushback is there. And what bothers me is rather than do the rational thing, which they did in the past, and I think there's a reason for it that we need to mention, rather than draw back and regroup and rethink things, they are pressing ahead with their narrative and they're running into more and more problems because of it. Now, the reason I think that's happening is the old guard died off. David Rockefeller isn't there to put the brakes on these people anymore. Zbigniew Brzezinski is not there to put the brakes on these people anymore. The only one of that old guard school that's still alive is Henry Kissinger. Yeah. What you have now are a bunch of young Turks in a hurry. You've got Bill Gates. You've got Klaus Schwab. You've got all the Davos set, as you say. And they're in a hurry.
Shock and awe.
Yeah, they want shock and awe. And the bad thing is, I think they're going to get it. But not the way they want.
Yeah.
You know, and that's also worrying because it could, you know, they're in control of the management and professional classes. And this is blowing up in their face. So whoever picks up the reins of power better have a shadow cabinet or things could get messy real fast.
Wow. Unbelievable. This is what we're heading into for 2022.
Yep. This is what we're heading into for 2022.
I don't even think we'll escape the rest of this year without some of this blowing up.
No, I don't either. I am agreed with you. Yeah, I agree.
I think those ships hanging out off the coast really tell us that. It's an extraordinary sight.
It is. And it's totally uncalled for. And the only thing that makes sense to me is that they've got to be looking for something. They are worried about something they're not telling us. And if it's she, you know, what's interesting, Daniel, here to contemplate is I surf the news on YouTube quite a lot. And I ran across this video of the Chinese loading tanks and military vehicles and personnel carriers and everything on this big ship somewhere in a Chinese port. I think it was Shanghai. And they're making quite a show of this. You know, we've got all these big ships and we're loading. Well, the problem here is the analysis on YouTube was the Chinese are preparing an amphibious invasion of Taiwan. And I'm looking at this ship and it's not an amphibious landing ship. It's simply a cargo ship. Huh. And you don't use those for amphibious landings unless you're Germans invading Norway. Mm-hmm. And, you know, nothing about it makes any sense. And I'm wondering if this is really what these cargo ships off of California might be containing. You know, this is how Germany invaded Norway.
Oh, right.
They loaded a bunch of troops on cargo ships and parked the cargo ships in Norwegian ports, and bang, the order came. And
unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Well, this is incredible to think about because we have a lot of historical parallels that are spinning right now. One of them is the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Yes.
Currently enough.
Yes.
And but this idea of preventing something from coming in is it's a quarantine line, yes. Yeah. Which is exactly what you see hanging off the coast.
Yes.
And what were the Kennedy administration was concerned about the Russians bringing in a nuke.
Right.
And further, you know, they knew that nuclear missiles were on the island. They didn't want any more nuclear munitions coming in. And they said, well, instead of bombing your ships, here's a line
right.
that we're doing. And, you know, the Russians, we had that tense 13-day incident that yep. took place. They finally backed down, but they were doing exactly what you're talking about, which is yes. the Kennedy administration was looking for on those ships, nuclear armaments coming in.
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. This is what I think is going on. I mean, it stands to reason if you want to take down this country, what's the best way to do it? Well, you let off a firecracker and then blame it on somebody else. And this is the other thing that gives me pause. Are we looking at another one of these drills that they're going to flip live? In other words, is it our deep state doing all of this?
Oh, yeah.
You know, I don't put anything past these people. And it would be convenient. Oh, it was a Chinese nuke. Mm-hmm. Let's go get China.
Right.
You know, let's. We don't even need to launch nukes at China. Just target their dams. And you've hurt that country for decades.
Mm.
It's a fragile country. Like it or not, it's a fragile country because a lot of their electrical power comes from those dams, and no electrical power, no arms manufacturing, no electrical power, no food production, no electrical power, no transportation.
Wow.
I mean, China is very, very fragile. Just look at it from a military point of view, and it's very, very much more fragile than we are.
Interesting.
And I wouldn't want to take any bets that Taiwan does not have some of that advanced technology to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be taking any bets like that at all.
Fascinating. We could be looking there at having carte blanche to exercise some of that advanced technology.
Yep.
Including yep. the DEW fact that we've become so advanced in.
Yeah.
Whenever I hear that China is going hypersonic or they're gaining on us in space, we know very well the United States is very far advanced beyond China on a number of levels, including this shadow weaponry and that entire yep. Black development of technology.
Yeah.
I would say far beyond them.
Yeah. I would too. And let's remember another nasty implication of everything that we've been talking about. How much of that technology is genuinely in the possession of the United States rather than the defense corporations?
Yes.
You know, the entire federal government right now is basically having all of its data managed by these defense corporations.
Yeah. That's a major problem.
That's a major problem.
Yeah.
Because these can easily flip the switch and become sovereign actors, and this is exactly what the Davis crowd wants.
Yes.
So, again, you know, this is a dangerous situation because nobody really can analyze what's going on and conclude conclusively that this is what's going on, whatever scenario they're proposing. I'm just tossing a lot of stuff out simply because these possibilities emerge from the data set.
Well, the defense contract, there's always been a push-pull with mm-hmm. the power structure and the defense contractors, especially right. after World War II.
Right.
And that's when they got that ascendancy of being this major power. So you kind of have a government struggle there to combine with mm-hmm. or, you know, control this thing that's growing. Mm-hmm. We know that after the Kennedy assassination, when the New Orleans DA Garrison went after mm-hmm. this, he kept running into aerospace connections yeah. over and over again. There's a genesis of that there, and now we're 50 years later, and they're talking about, hey, you know, Jeff Bezos is going to own the moon. mm-hmm. This is really how it works, which is that corporate structure merges with these aerospace things, but that was always a weird thing that was hanging out there, like who's in charge of the aerospace wing of the military industrial complex?
Exactly.
And how much does it play with the UFO file?
Oh, I would say hugely.
Yeah.
Let's remember something about the UFO file. And it emerges in the Cooper Cantwheel set of Magic 12 documents, which, again, I'm not pronouncing on their authenticity or lack thereof. I'm simply reporting what they say.
They're in the public domain, after all.
They're in the public domain, after all. But one of the things that those sets of documents do say is that Nixon, during his administration, turned all of the UFO files over to the private corporations. Yeah. That was his way of ensuring they remained secret. So, again, you know,
right.
what are we dealing with here with all of this exotic technology? It's coming out of those corporations. And they're, as far as I can tell, Daniel, they're setting their own agenda with all of this. So, you know, we have in this country no equivalent of the Republic of Venice's national arsenal, which was a government corporation that produced all of the Republic of Venice's military, from their galleys to their cannon and so on and so forth. There's only two countries in the world that have something similar, and that's China and Russia. Mm-hmm. In the West, it's the corporations running it. So you've got German corporations building thermonuclear warheads for the French to put on the French submarines, and you've got American corporations controlling the UFO files and the data management for the Pentagon. That's a mess.
You know, that's really interesting, because what you're doing is you're opening up this question, which is, would you regard then the reengineering of the UFO file, the real kind of working with it, as something that the Americans have ascendancy in? They're the top dog when it comes to that.
I would say that we would probably be one of three or four top dogs. Mm-hmm. I'm convinced that the Russian UFO files are as extensive as the American version. The Chinese, probably very similar, and they're very secretive about it, as they would be. And then you have players like India or Brazil, you know, the European Union powers and so on and so forth that have their own versions of it. And really, the only two powers in Europe that have talked publicly about their version of UFO files in connection to deep state are Great Britain, you know, think of Nick Pope here, okay. and then France with Comita.
Yes.
You know, they're the only ones that have talked publicly. We haven't heard really a peep from Spain or Italy or Germany or any of the other European powers. So, again, I would say the United States probably has a leg up on all the rest, because we were involved with UFOs very early on after World War II. But by the same token, so were the Russians.
Right.
So, you know, who knows what they've got?
Their files are much less known.
Their files are much less known. And let's remember, Andropov, during that brief period that he was in charge of the Soviet Union, had the entire Red military making UFO reports directly to a special office in the KGB.
It's incredible.
He wanted to get to the bottom of it, so he recruited the entire Soviet military to do it. Now, that's quite an intelligence source.
Yeah. In regard to that, I want to stick on this UFO file for a minute because I feel like there's a lot moving in relation to it.
Oh, yes.
The you see this incredible authoritarian push around Australia, but one thing we have in Australia, which targets China, but also is well known as the American-Australian Area 51, is Pine Gap.
Pine Gap.
That type of proximity there, and the fact that Australia is now becoming this incredibly authoritarian state. And we know that there was a number of steps, but they used this crisis in order to really push it home. And, you know, now their leaders get on television and they give these bizarre speeches about, you know, stay in your house and we'll throw your food to you kind of thing. And we have the New Zealand leader being like, we're building two classes of citizens, you know, those who do what the government says and those who don't, and the ones who don't won't enjoy any freedoms, you know, just really coming out and gleefully. She looked like Goebbels when she was smiling. I was like, it's kind of like Goebbels in a wig, if you really look at it, Jacinda. But what I'm getting at is that area is they've been able to conduct extensive UFO research without anyone really checking in on it. Because even in Area 51, you've always had people around it reporting on it, leakers, whatever. Pine Gap is in the middle of nowhere. And the group that supports it, you know, they've built out a town there in Alice Springs for the people who work there. So it's a very contained environment. What do you think, you know, if it came down to it, in terms of our UFO research being that close to China, is that part of an intimidation piece against them?
I'll go you one further. Ever since this nonsense in Australia started, I've been wondering, how do we rationalize this behavior from a country that has prided itself not only on its freedoms, but which has prided itself on being a reliable, and they have been a reliable ally to the United States. And there's another thing to bear in mind, and that was the scotching of the French submarine deal with Australia.
Oh, yes.
By this country.
Yeah.
Okay. And Daniel, this is going to, again, this is going to sound completely wacky, but I think there has to be another reason for why they want the Australian population locked down so tightly. And the only thing I can think of is they don't want them to see something.
Oh, right.
And they don't want them traveling. Now, there's two things that come to my mind as to why they might be doing this. Number one, something possibly related to space, UFOs, what have you. And the other thing is Australia and New Zealand are also ports of entry to Antarctica.
Oh, right.
And there's something that they are trying to hide by keeping people away from watching the government, watching the airports, and so on and so forth. That's the only thing I can think of here. And I think it may have, as you say, something to do with Australia's role as an intelligence collector, as a base for secret research, which I certainly think Pine Gap is, and as a base for surveillance. There's something going on geopolitically across the globe that they are worried about. And the PlanScandemic is a handy, ready-to-hand, easily twisted narrative to keep everybody distracted.
Wow. It seems like the people in Australia are, you know, completely dumbfounded by this.
Yeah, I don't blame them.
Yeah, exactly. And I call it an international crisis. I think that, you know, there are every country that's there at the UN should look at what's happening in Australia and be like, you know, what are we going to do? I mean, do we have to fly them in munitions and food, you know, because the governments are just acting in such a repressive fashion.
Well, look at Australia from the standpoint of the Commonwealth. Back when Brexit occurred, one of the first things I said, which has been borne out, one of the first things I said is what you're going to see as a consequence of this is the United Kingdom is going to start playing the soft power card, and it's going to use the Commonwealth to do it. And you're going to see the United Kingdom make major steps to becoming a space power, and it's going to do it through the Commonwealth. Well, bang, 2 weeks later, the United Kingdom is talking to the Australian Defense Minister in Paris about cooperation on space matters. So if you look at the countries in the world where you have the most severe repression in terms of a reaction to COVID, the countries are the United Kingdom under Boris Johnson, Canada under Justin Trudeau, Australia, and New Zealand.
Yeah. Wow. Incredible.
So I think there's something else going on, and COVID is just the handy narrative.
Right. Joseph, amazing information. Stay right there, and we'll get into how some of this plays into some recent moves at NASA and the Space Force. And we'll also go deeper into the real reason for the mad rush to global dictatorship. Now, Dark Journalist members will get that part two first this weekend. Remember to go to darkjournalist.com and join us now. Joseph's amazing work can be found at GizaDeathStar.com. We'll be back next week with a new episode of the X-Series. See you soon.